At this time, we'll start the board meeting. We will stand and pledge allegiance to the flag, and after we do that, would you stand for a moment of silence for former Stanislaus County Sheriff William Fred Woods.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Do we have any public comments at this time? Yes, please step up. That's fine. Just once again, give your name.
Thank you. My name is Deborah Harper, and I reside in Modesto, California. Thank you. I haven't, didn't plan to come here this morning, but something brought me here for some reason, so prayers. I was able to show two x-rays, one of 41509 and of 12410 of clear degeneration in my brain. Okay, this goes to the healthcare of Stanislaus County, respectfully. I've been politely putting it in the phrase, you know, let's participate, patients participate in their healthcare. I have experienced a tremendous amount of hostility and retaliation over the healthcare issue, and I'm just amazed, one, that we can be able to show the x-rays in a public meeting to get it out in the open. Two, prayers that we can discuss this kind of the imperfections or upgrades in the county, throughout the county. We have a tremendous amount of potential to do a lot of good for a lot of people with just a small amount of effort. Yet, what I've experienced is a tremendous amount of hostility because I'm disagreeing with the physician. My primary dropped me. My specialists are referring, I'm going through the county system at the moment. The specialists will keep referring me back to my primary doctor, who took on my case because my normal primary doctor left the office. He made it clear he couldn't take on her caseload, but he was kind enough to take on my patient care until I found a new doctor. In the meantime, my health care advanced to specialist levels. In the process, the specialist kept referring me back to the primary. He just kind of threw his hands up, not literally, but I can't do this, you know, because I'm a family practitioner who's, you know, who wasn't capable of taking care of the new patient load from the physician leaving. So respectfully, the specialists, I don't know, the request is that we get together on the same page with a continuity of care. It's not a competition. It's not a popularity contest. Healthcare takes little effort to coordinate very, very significant, you know, healthcare potential. So I just pray that we can get upgrades. You know, we have these mega business people who upgrade their computers, upgrade everything twice a year, three times a year, and yet we have such a resistance to upgrading anything as far as people are concerned or the health care in the county. I just read that we received a mega grant, I mean a very large sum, which is an awesome thing, to train our residents. And that is awesome, but we can't train them the wrong way. Thank you.
Thank you very much. At this time, we'll go to the consent calendar. Would someone like to make
a motion to approve the consent calendar?
Is there a second?
I will second that.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? It's been passed. At this time, we'll go to B4, the approval of Stanislaus County Emergency Operation Plan and Associated Emergency Functions. Gary Hinshaw.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring, Gary Hinshaw, your Fire Warden, Office of Emergency Services, and I guess I should add another title, Modesto Regional Fire Authority, since that's been passed, so I thought that would be appropriate. With me today, and a special thanks goes to Chris Holmer, who's associated our office with the Homeland Security Grants. Deb Thrasher is the program manager that manages our Homeland Security Grants, our planning, training, exercise, equipment, and et cetera. She is the two people that really make this happen. I'm going to start with a statement. The statement is, a failure to plan is a plan to fail. Many of you have seen the St. Paul-Minneapolis bridge collapse and the efforts that St. Paul-Minneapolis went through to prepare on their emergency preparedness side. I think the analysis was that there were over 100 state, county, city, and federal agencies that responded to that before their emergency plan and efforts that they did to prepare their community. It would have taken days to get all those assets there. They did it in a matter of minutes and hours, and they had a very positive outcome for something that was so catastrophic that they didn't think that would hit their community. The last time that we updated the emergency operations plan for Stanislaus County was in 2002. The cities followed in 2004, so it's been a number of years, and this plan needed to be updated. It was funded by the Homeland Security Grants. We do that for all nine cities through the Homeland Security Grants at the local level, so all nine plans are consistent with our plan. Next slide. Really, the purpose of this, I always start with many of the communities that we get into, and Supervisor DeMartini and I were over in Newman. We've done Newman, Patterson, Houston, Riverbank, Oakdale, have all passed their emergency operations plans. I usually ask them, how many times have we activated our emergency operations center since 2002, and how many proclamations of local emergencies have we had? And most times we think we live in a very safe community, and we do. We really do. But we've activated our EOC over 13 times. We've populated it many more times than that over the last 7 or 8 years, and we've had five local proclamations. Most of those are tied to either a weather event, natural event, such as an extreme weather event. The city of Riverbank had 2 inches of rain in 45 minutes in the downtown community, and their city manager, Rich Homer, called us on a Friday afternoon usually. It always occurs late on a Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock, and it's that, Houston, we have a problem, we need help. And they needed several of the county's assets and resources that we were able to deploy for them. We have floods. We have some fires that are on both our peripheries of the county on occasion that we've opened the Emergency Operations Center to support. And we have this new thing since 2002 called CBRN, chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and explosives. That's part of the terrorism side of this thing. This plan really establishes the emergency management system that's required to mitigate disasters in our community. That's above the day-to-day activity. This is above what law enforcement, fire, hazmat, or emergency services provide. This is when we need the assets of the entire county. And every county has an operational area, so there are 58 operational area coordinators. If I have a need that exceeds the capabilities of the nine cities, if they call us and we can't fill it, we go to a vertical relationship into a region in the state. And at that vertical relationship, we go into the region, which gives me another 11 counties to provide those resources that we may or may not have. If we can't do it within that, we go to the state and we open it up to the state to 58 counties to get the resources and assets that we might need here to mitigate an emergency. And beyond that, we go to the federal government, the FEMA and the EMAC agreement that would allow us to access federal resources. This plan also uses a standard emergency management system as its foundation, and that's really a requirement under the State Emergency Services Act. Senator Petras lost his home in a fire in 1991 up in the Oakland Hills, as you remember. They're born the standard emergency management system. Everybody thinks we played really nicely together in all those years, but when we got over there, we couldn't communicate in the Oakland Hills. We were on different frequencies. Fire had different size hoses and couplings, and we began standardizing all of this equipment so that we could play from county to county, share resources, and operate as one when necessary. And then the last thing is it really complies with the National Incident Management System. That's a federal requirement for us to maintain eligibility for our grants. The operational area, we have a JPA that's signed by all nine cities. They are our partner agencies, and every month Deborah Thrasher leads the operational area council meeting, and we meet with the emergency managers from the nine cities. But it has grown. We have partner agencies now that really go much beyond the cities as we look at emergencies. American Red Cross, United Way, the Community Emergency Response Team, or CERT, Advancing Vibrant Communities, our schools at all levels, the Latino Emergency Communications Group, Mountain Valley EMS, all of our utilities are partners in this, our faith-based groups, our non-governmental agencies, county departments, private industry, International Weather Service are all partner agencies that have signed on and meet with us monthly to review our plans and preparedness as we move into the challenges that we face. Next slide. In the EOP that's in front of you, there are really five elements to it. It's the basic plan, the attachments, the glossary of terms. Emergency functions is a new requirement this year that we didn't have years in the past, and our annexes. And the reason I want to touch on annexes is they're a dynamic process. We have our terrorism annex, our ag element annex in there, our pan-flu annex. All of those meet into that annex section. And the reason that we put them there is that they're dynamic processes. As we learn more about how we can manage these emergencies, those annexes are updated, and they're changed to meet the new changes that we see as far as challenges. So the annexes are dynamic. The rest of the document has to come back for your approval. Again, this is what we have this in front of you today for. Next piece. In our basic plan, it really states the purpose, and the purpose is to provide guidance for us to respond to and recover from an emergency. And there are really about five parts to that. There's preparedness and planning that we do in our office meeting with all of the nine emergency managers. There's training and exercises, again, that we're getting ready for Golden Guardian in May that will communicate with our cities, our hospitals, and the state agencies as we exercise on a much larger basis. Response and mitigation, that's where the rubber meets the road. That's how we take the assets and resources and put them where they're needed in the county to mitigate emergencies. And the one that gets forgotten, but is probably almost the most important, is recovery. We've seen time after time where local areas have not documented their efforts, and at the end of the day, when they go for Stafford Act or if they go to FEMA and ask for reimbursement, they're not eligible because they didn't meet some of the mandates. So recovery is a critical component of our plan. Let's go back one just for a second. Inside the basic plan, there's a concept of operations. It outlines how all the agencies come together in our emergency operations center or in field settings. We've identified the hazards and threats that exist in our county. The reconstitution of government is what happens if something happened to this building and took all of us out. Who's next in charge, and how do we do succession line of authority? And that's outlined in our plan. Our emergency operations center, we have one at 3705, and we have an alternate site in Ceres, and we have a reciprocal agreement between the city of Modesto, Ceres, and Stanislaus County for the use of those two centers. Our emergency proclamations, and we've been maybe unfortunately or fortunately have some experience in that, but we have been blessed with great legal staff, and between Jack's office and his staff, we have several emergency proclamations and outlines that are included in here that we would use should that be required, and then the recovery component. Next are our attachments, and in the back of the binder, you'll see that we have our emergency functions, a decision process that I'm going to talk about in just a minute, the disaster council, our op area agreement, and the list goes on of items in there. The next slide, please. Next slide. This first bullet really is that we had a Stanislaus County Civil Defense and Disaster Council that was established in 1946, and it was readopted in 1949. And some of the names that I brought before you in April of 2008 when you brought us into the 21st century updated this document, and now we have a sitting disaster council of which our CEO, Rick Robinson, is the chair, and our supervisor, Dee Martini, sit on that with all the representatives of the nine cities. And that we brought into the 21st century in April of 2008, but it had been there a long-standing disaster council. Additionally, there's some maps, tables, list of standby officers, emergency public information, and some of those things. Next page. One of the new requirements is that we have emergency functions, and the emergency functions are how do we carry on day-to-day operations much longer than just 72 hours to a week. We're talking 21 days, 30 days. I'll give you an example. Care and Shelter in 2006, when we had the San Joaquin River that rose to a flood level over there, we had to evacuate some folks. We opened the Care and Shelter facility on the west side over in Patterson. The primary agency that's identified in page 33 of your document is Care and Shelter through CSA, through Community Services Agency. But the supporting agencies that helped maintain that in a state of readiness where people could arrive were Department of Environmental Resources, Behavioral Health, Public Works, Animal Services, CalEMA, our faith-based organizations, American Red Cross, law enforcement, and public health. So you can see that opening a care and shelter facility, you might be the primary agency, but in an emergency function, what we want you to do is build a plan that includes all your supporting agencies so that that plan is in place. We're not really looking at failure. We're looking at success in these events. So it becomes a standard platform for emergency response beyond day-to-day. It really outlines how we identify all of our stakeholders and what roles they play should we need that emergency function activated. Next slide. Emergency functions in the very back of the book are identified by Public Works and their partners, Fire and Rescue, Emergency Management, Care Shelter, and Public Health. There are more. Hazardous Materials, Ag, Law Enforcement, Emergency Communications, and Animal Services. Now, in the city's plans, not all of them have agricultural components, not all of them have county public health, so they depend on our plan. So when we updated our plans, 5 of the 9 cities have updated theirs, 4 in the works. Our plans are consistent with their plans. Where we have overlapping or conjoining responsibilities, or a county is the responsible agency, their plans point to our plans for their emergency functions and their operations plan. Next slide. I'm always asked, how do we escalate something in the county? And it's not really magic. It's a very defined system and a procedure that's been adopted through the Emergency Operations Center and approved by Rick as the department, as his director of the Office of Emergency Services. And it goes something like this. We refer to a lot of acronyms, TAG, and it's a threat assessment group. And really, in the threat assessment group, we had one just a couple of weeks ago where the Department of Water Resources had a conversation with the county relative to possible runoff flows to the spring, and if we'd had another storm that was predicted on the horizon, they wanted to have some conversations with some of the local agencies. That threat assessment group is a standing group. It's the CEO in my office. We sit down with whatever agency that would be the lead. In many cases, it's either public health or our ag commissioner. It's again on Friday afternoon about 5 o'clock that they'll call and say, we have an issue that really has arisen to a level that we need to have some conversations. Rick, as the director, will take a look at that. We will have a conversation with whoever the specialist might be, in this case public health or the ag commissioner. And then we do one of 3 things in our TAG, and that is to determine if the threat assessment, we understand it, that we've heard it, but it really doesn't require any action on our part. The second part of that is it's escalated to a level 2, which says that basically we need to further monitor this and stay in touch with this thing. Level 3 is immediate action is required. If it's in a level 2 or 3, the CEO has the ability to escalate that into what we call a STANMAC, Multi-Agency Coordination for Stanislaus County. I'll go back to 2009 in May when we had the H1N1 outbreak and some of our schools were being impacted. Our Director of Office of Emergency Services, our CEO, convened a STANMAC group that included our schools, all of our public health and folks, our legal counsel, and we spent 2 or 3 days going through the assessment, making the determination what was the appropriate action, not just for the county and the 9 cities, but the schools and the community of over 500,000 that we serve. So that's the process that we run through to make sure that we just don't lurch into these things. They're really analyzed, and the determination is made by the subject matter experts. Where are we? Where are we going? What do we need to do? So that's the process that we use. Next slide. I apologize for this slide, but it's the only way I could really get it all on there. At the top in the red is basically a disaster council. That's the 9 cities and the CEO from the county that makes up our disaster council that was convened and reconstituted in April of 2008. The operational area council is the group that I did about the third slide that really has the 9 cities as the partners and then all of the allied agencies that make up our partner agencies. And then the next page that I want you to go to is the decision process. If one of those partner agencies is going to develop a plan or needs to have a plan approved through the disaster council, they bring it into this decision process. It comes into the operational area council. They assign that to either a specific task force or an ad hoc task force. They do the research on that. They bring that back to the group. They approve it at the operational area level. So all 9 city emergency managers have a review of this. So do our partner and allied agencies. Then it's recommended for escalation to the disaster council. When it goes to the disaster council would approve it as to format and content consistent with SIMS, NIMS, and ICS, and to our county general plan, so that we're our emergency operation plan, so we're consistent. We don't want to have 2 different agencies pointed to 2 different directions for response and mitigation in a time of emergency. It has to be consistent, has to be through a single point. So we bring those decisions back to their. Some of the things that we've had approved by the Disaster Council, I think of significance, is our Medical Reserve Corps training program, our Medical Surge Plan, our ARES training plan, which is our amateur radios. They brought that before us just the other day. United Way brought an MOU that they have for what they call EVC, and it's for our volunteer groups that they would then, in emergencies, they would then categorize them and make them available to the cities and the county should we have the need for volunteers. So many of those are brought back to the to the Disaster Council for their approval and then become part of our emergency plan at a local level. Next slide. I'm going to deviate just a little bit because I have to. I've done this in all five of the cities. I would continue to do this. This is something that I think is important in the way of a little bit of a public service announcement. We have a notification system that the county, the nine cities have purchased that we use, and many people refer to it as a reverse 911. We have used that in several cases where we can draw geographical lines on a map. We've used it in Riverbank. We've used it in Modesto. We've used it in the Ceres area. When we've either had fires, we've had some chemical releases, or we've had an active shooter in an area, the local agency responsible for that jurisdiction can request and use the system, which would then draw a geographical boundary around the community, and then we can call all of the residents in there and let them know, shelter in place, this is an active shooter, we want you to remain indoors. Local authority can give them the instructions that they need to either evacuate, stay in place, et cetera. And the reason that I bring that up is the self-registration piece at the bottom. Right now, our system is capable of dialing land-based phones. Well, we're not a mobile, we're pretty much a mobile society. Most of us don't depend on our land-based phones. And a lot of our 25-year-olds and younger, they depend on a cell phone as their primary means of communications. We have a self-registration capability so that you can register not only your address, but maybe your family's residence in different locations within the county. Should there be an alert notification or emergency notification sent out to a geographical boundary, and when my mom was alive, I would have her address in my self-registration, so it would call my phone and say something in that area was happening. I might know about it, but if I didn't work for the Office of Emergency Services, I wouldn't know about it. So certainly stated, if we were going to send out a notification, there's a way that you can sign up five of addresses of your family members by your phone. Self-registration, our IT folks have put this in place for us. It's a great tool for the public to register. And the next slide, this is how you do it. Again, kind of a small slide, but go to the Fire Warden or the Office of Emergency Services website. Click on that red arrow. It walks you through how to sign up. It's very simple. And in 6 months, if nothing's changed, you'll get an email back to your email address requesting validation of that number. Or if you've changed it, then you would update that information at that time. So it is a tool that we're seeing greater and greater use in the county. And for those that depend on their cell phones, this is a way that you can get the emergency notifications in a geographical area. That concludes my presentation. I would entertain any questions regarding the emergency operations plan.
I mean, members of the board, some questions?
One question. On the sign up of your mobile phone, mm-hmm. Do we do any advertising for that, or have we tried to contact people?
We do it through a lot of our speaking engagements, our local Rotary groups, and some of those we bring that out. But we've really not done a great publication in the newspaper, on radio, or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. The first couple times we've had it in place for about 2 years. We've done several tests. The Knights Ferry area, we tested all the way down to Oakdale. We've done some tests in Riverbank and in Salida. And then we've had five or so times that we've used that. It works very well. I think it's robust enough now that we believe that we probably should begin making that known.
Okay, if you could just get some more information, probably for all of us, because I think that'd be a great speaking point when we're out in the community. I think
we'll get your document on it. We'd love to.
I'd like to add just a couple comments, if I may. First, I want to recognize and acknowledge Chief Hinshaw and Deb Thrasher, who, with the support of staff, have invested thousands of hours, and I'm not exaggerating, in the development of this emergency operations plan. A plan like this doesn't come together on its own, and so it takes an integration and an ongoing relationship with both the nine cities in the county and all of the support groups within the county, both public and private agencies. And this program could not be possible without the support of the nine cities and the county. The efforts of the Office of Emergency Services in times of a crisis are represented as a high-risk, low-occurrence event, meaning this is something that's going to be really, really bad, but it's not going to happen very often. And our tendency when we are in an environment where we see high-risk, low-occurrence is to set those planning processes behind because we want to deal with the 90% of the things that are on our plates all the time. And so we miss out on the opportunity to plan and prepare for those events that can have the most catastrophic outcome to our communities and the residents of the communities. And this emergency operations plan and the relationship that's been developed both with public and private support groups is absolutely critical. Chief Hinshaw and Deb almost single-handedly brought the disaster council back to a reality, and that is such a critical component of the Stanislaus County Emergency Response Plan, because what it does is it brings the 9 cities and the county in a room whenever we need to discuss something that's really important. And that hasn't occurred very frequently in probably the last 20 years prior to the reintroduction of this disaster council. And why that's important is that we need to be talking about the same issues. We need to identify and agree on the same risks. We need to understand what the response plans are and concur with how those response plans will be implemented in each of the jurisdictions. And we need to understand what resources are available to us, evaluate those resources, and determine if they meet the mission of our Office of Emergency Services, and if so, incorporate and integrate those services with the response plan that ultimately is adopted by the Board of Supervisors in the 9 cities. I will tell you, having seen a number of offices work throughout the state over many years, that there is no Office of Emergency Services that runs as efficiently as that under the direction of Chief Hinshaw, and we're very, very fortunate to have he and Deb and the entire staff supporting the emergency needs of Stanislaus County and its 9 cities. Thank you very much.
Supervisor DeMartini.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd also like to commend Chief Hinshaw on a really excellent presentation on a very complex plan. He did a good job in simplifying it. I've been to the meetings, and our emergency response plan is a couple inches thick, and it establishes procedures and response plans for any possible type of emergency. And this plan's got a lot of hours involved in staff time, and pretty much prepares the region for any possible type of disaster, and just how we're going to respond to it and how we're going to recover to it. So anyway, that's. I think it's a good plan. We've got everybody on the same page. We've got all 9 cities involved in it. And it's. I think we're prepared for anything. I hope we never have to use it. One of the things you didn't touch on that I just want to mention, because I was reading through this thing, is how an integral part United Way is in this and coordinating volunteers for people to just show up at the door and say, hey, I'm everything from a doctor to somebody who wants to fill a sandbag, and how the United Way, in coordination with us, manages all these volunteers to get the job done for whatever it is that needs to be done. It's a good plan, and so I think it'll serve us well.
Thank you.
If there are no further comments by the board, I'll open this to the public.
Deborah Harper, residing in Modesto, and that was awesome. Are the meetings open to the public that have the 2-inch plans? Does anybody know? What you just shared.
The disaster council is it is open to the public, and those meetings are noticed 72 hours in advance, and certainly if you're interested in that, we can get you on the mailing list.
Awesome. So there is a mailing list that anybody can Google?
Yes, we'll get you that information. I'll catch you up.
Thank you. Also, a certain list shouldn't exist at all, but when we have a list, there's a lack of something. So if we can take the information that's presented in public and actually go in detail with the public, it would actually come together in a more effective manner. Thank you.
Thank you. In that case, I'll bring it back to the board.
Motion to approve.
Motion approved. Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 All those in opposed? Pass.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. This time I believe we have correspondence.
This board excuse me, has received a copy of the annual financial report for year ended June 30th, 2010 for the Keys Community Services District.
Referred to the auditor controller.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and referred to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. At this, let's see, the Board of Supervisors have any reports? Okay. Supervisor Chiesa.
Thank you, Chair. Yesterday I went with the City of Turlock and Councilwoman Mary Jackson up to, there was a joint assembly subcommittee, it was revenue and taxation. I'll give you the parameters really quick. And there were a lot of people, there were 29 assembly members present at the beginning at 1 o'clock, and I left at 5 o'clock. There were only two things on the agenda, enterprise zones and redevelopment agencies. And I will tell you exactly how the cities and some of the counties feel about it. They took up the enterprise zones first. 70 speakers wanted to comment. You know, these people drove hours, and they got 30 seconds, and they'd shut the mic off. So it's pretty much what you would expect, you know, as an economic tool for, there's not a lot of things left out there to bring jobs, and enterprise zones are one of them. So that subject was done about almost close to four, and then they started on the redevelopment agencies. And there were 11 assembly people there when I left at 5 o'clock listening. So they, you know, you were talking to some empty chambers. It's pretty interesting. And what I think is ironic, and I didn't go up to speak in favor or against, although I think that they've been very successful here in this county. They've had years to deal with the budget, and here we are with a 30-day deadline starting yesterday, and they're taking up these important issues. The conversation was not about fixing the inequities of the system, because there are some, you know, arguably some inequities in the system. But it was either elimination or continuation, and there was nothing in between. There was no discussion about the in-between, which, again, with a 30-day timeline, I find very ironic. And they did some panel discussions. It was interesting on the enterprise zone. The Public Policy Institute has had numerous studies of which they say there's no economic benefit, or it doesn't create jobs. And then there was a USC was had done a study that said just the opposite. They had absolutely contradictory information, 180 degrees, not 90 degrees different, 180 degrees with the same information. So, and yet they're still trudging forward with a 30-day deadline. So I guess I'm telling everyone to be aware, not just you know, the Board of Supes, because we're going to live it. We're living the uncertainty, but the public too. Because the timeline in which they're trying to fix this problem is, you know, not in the realm. If we talk about transparency and open government, we can continue down this path, but at some point on the 29th day, the deals are going to be done, just like they always were. So I guess I'm imploring everyone to stay involved and engaged, not only our department heads that are out there, not only the board members, but the public too. So.
Any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, on Thursday I did the same thing. I sat on the Senate side listening to the redevelopment hearing, and there are only three senators there. And in my mind, it's quite clear they've made up their mind already. And although I still encourage everybody to get their input in, Supervisor Kiss is absolutely right. The last day they'll cut the deals and pass something. But it won't be to our benefit.
Any other comments? Well, at this time, I'll have the legislative, fiscal, and management report. Chief Executive Officer.
I think our two supervisors have summed up very well what's happening in Sacramento, which is mostly a relatively chaotic process that is not well-founded in good public policy. It relies instead on rhetoric that can take any number of forms using the same information as indicated by Supervisor Chiesa in recognizing that the USC can do a study and the Public Policy Institute can do a study using the same information, both of which are highly regarded institutions, and come out with diametrically opposing outcomes. I think that this is fundamentally one of the challenges that the legislature is going to face, and that we as public agencies are going to face in trying to craft and work with the administration in crafting a realignment proposal that will both meet the needs of the state of California and protect counties against the future program growth and the costs associated with that growth, which right now are not clearly defined or demonstrated in any information that's been shared with public agencies. So we've got an uphill battle. We'll continue to work to the best of our ability to see if we can fashion a positive outcome for this.
At this time, we'll recess to sit as the Stanislaus County In-Home Support Service Public Authority. The meeting will be called to order. Consent calendar. Someone move?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? It's been passed. Correspondence none. Public hearing none. Agenda none. Public forum. Is there anyone who wishes to speak? If done, we will now adjourn. We also, I'll bring it back to reconvene to sit as the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors. And at this time, we will adjourn and also have a comment by the County Council.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have a closed session this morning. First is conference with legal counsel to discuss existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision A, involving one case. That's Leslie Cook versus Stanislaus County et al., Stanislaus County Superior Court, case number 660775. Additionally, we have conference with labor negotiator. The agency negotiator is Richard Robinson, and the labor organization is the County Attorneys Association. This will be held pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. We do not expect to report out on either matter.
Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.